don't give a damn if it's 9 a.m. My football team's got me drinking. My football team's got me drinking. My football team's got me drinking. Give me beer or whiskey, wine or gin. Anything to shake this mood I'm in. My football team's got me drinking.
Back at it again. This is the Shades of Blue Soccer Show. My name is Cody Bradley, and I have a full studio with me tonight of my Blue Testament brethren and sistren.
Brethren and sistren.
Roll
I like
call.
It. I like
She's
it.
A sister now? What?
Sistren. Roll call, please.
Allie Trost, the, I guess, sister. I
almost
Isn't
a
Slytherin,
cistern something
like,
to do with a well?
Harry Potter.
Isn't it like a well?
Yes,
yeah.
a cistern is a well, water reservoir.
A
yeah.
well of
okay.
knowledge and
well,
insight
right.
on
That's
Sporting Kansas
right.
City. That's
it's
why we're
right.
all here.
It's
you're
deep.
Drinking water.
And I'm drinking a cup of water.
That was a phenomenal transition. That was a good setting.
Deep and rich.
Robert Russert's here as well.
And Thad Bell.
Cool. Nice intros there, gentlemen. Okay. So we're all very mediocre about that draw.
Yep. That's about what we are.
I tried to get the studio like amped up, but I don't. No one really was after that.
I mean, even the coaches at halftime were like, "Yeah,
man,
yeah, there wasn't much there."
It was a boring game.
Yeah,
minus the one shining moment of Rubio, which was pretty glorious.
I wouldn't even say it's boring, just because, you know, it's kind of a nail biter kind of thing. You're worried about what's going to happen because Sporting wasn't playing very good. But it wasn't a very good game.
Yes, there was that worry. I think everyone saw that they were not playing good. But that's just like every single time RSL comes about, that seems to be how it is.
They seem to have Sporting's number. But I still do wonder if that was really more of a ploy and a strategy, was to kind of sit back and force them to try to drive something instead of them, you know, countering Sporting and making that run. So I do wonder if that was a strategy of Vermees, was to just sit back and play more of a counterattack game and see what they could handle.
Yeah, I mean, I rewatched before I came here, and we were pressing really high first half. Second half, we dropped off a little bit, but it seemed like we didn't want to get in a run and gun with them, which is probably a smart idea, but then again, they had played on Wednesday. Maybe we should have gone for the throat from the get-go. I don't know, but we seem to be told, okay, press high, hope for things to happen, but don't get in a run and gun, kind of be composed. And I think that kind of took us out of our game, really.
They did press high, but they dropped off the press pretty quickly. So, I mean, they
right,
were
right.
They were doing the occasional press right up and around the box, but as soon as that broke a little bit, they just dropped off and then tried to regroup back around their box, more or less.
Yeah, but we certainly didn't play our attacking game. I assume that was intentional. Yeah. Let's not open ourselves up.
I agree, but the chances were there, especially in the first half. And, like, very early on, I thought they should have had the lead. It would have been a carbon copy of the last time I was at the Vancouver game. Shelton muscled somebody out of the way and then just pushed it over for an easy curler for Shallowy. Except he didn't take the curler. He, like, took another touch and then I don't even think got a shot off on it. And then Shelton, who just doesn't have that lethal bite as he's taking a shot.
Yeah, shall we just
forced
wasn't,
a save, but
just
still.
Wasn't on, was he?
No, he was not.
Yeah, he was just
but,
flat.
And I think at touch. Least everyone on Twitter seemed to realize that, except for Vermees, who was stayed with him a little longer than I think many were hoping for.
Yeah. I would have brought him out around the 60 point myself.
Would have been nice after we scored to put Gerso in and maybe go for a little more attacking option. Yeah.
Numero dos. Yeah, there was definitely missing element that Shelton, Shallowy, and Russell usually bring, but I think Shallowy being, I don't know, I think it's so interesting, like, talking to the team, hearing the team talk about upcoming games like this at practice, and then seeing that kind of performance, like, you know, it's talking like so much energy, like they're trying to win it for the first time since 2013. And I don't know, it just seemed very like there wasn't a lot of energy. You didn't get that energy at all.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I mean, it can be a psychological thing. Okay, guys, you know, but here's our strategy. Here's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. We're going to sit back. We're going to let them have the ball. And that can take it kind of mentally out of a player and dull his aggressiveness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, not and
in some ways.
That's very true and very possible. And the flip side of it is in the back of their mind that they have had four straight exits in the first game that they played in the playoffs. Yeah. And here they are on the road against a team that's had their number for the last 4 years, essentially, except for the one-off type games. And maybe that's in their head, too, is that, hey, we're going to play a little extra cautiously and we're not going to try to expose ourselves too much. And for the most part, they did limit Salt Lake's chances, except for one pretty spectacular actual give-and-go. Yeah. And that was, I mean, that was a great goal, quite honestly.
Yeah, that was beautiful. I don't know how you stop that.
And for a boring game, both goals were, like, awesome. So at least there was that.
Yeah, both kind of were just individual moments that were like, whoa, where did that come from?
And see, that's where, I mean, a lot of people will say it was a boring game, but I'm going to kind of argue that point. I don't think it was boring because it was nervous and stuff. I think it was just that both teams were taking each other out of their game.
Yeah.
RSL has been good at taking SKC out of their game in the last few years. I think this time it was them taking the Salt Lake out of their game, and both of them were just, it was like two brawlers just going at it, and neither one finding the true advantage, except both landed a good bunch, and now it's going to be the second round, except it's going to be at our home.
Mm-hmm. They were definitely taken out of their game, but that Shallowy and Shelton moment was not the only one in the first half. Roger missed a glorious opportunity, a header like inside the 6-yard box, I think, that he couldn't even get on frame or force a save.
Well, of all people for those chances to fall to, we know Shelton's not the best finisher, and Roger, despite his bomb of last week, is not known for being well with his head. So
how many Sporting players are though in those situations in the box? Like how many score, like other than Ike? What are some other cool headball goals that we've seen this season that are notable?
This season? Yeah.
Felipe in Chicago had that one.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was like second or third game of the season. Yeah.
Statman needed to pull up the stats. Who had the headers? Yeah, and it's they don't really have that presence that make me feel strong about they're going to get a header in the box.
If Sporting did have that presence, I mean, think how many free kicks they draw, how many corners they're – like. What are their stats compared to other teams for how many corner kicks that they draw? Because I feel like they're pretty high up there. And I feel like there's never, I mean, no one gets excited when they line up for a corner kick.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, all right, now it's basically just like a restart from.
Except for last time we played Real Salt Lake at home, that's how we scored. Opara's. Of course, it was Opara, like you said.
Of course, but yeah. But it's hard because he's the target in the situation.
Right.
Every team knows who to man.
Yeah, I'd love to have another one in the box who's a little more adept.
And he's wearing a protective head thing now. So,
So he may not be going up for anytime soon.
Yeah. And I have to imagine that makes it harder to be accurate with a header anyway. So.
Yeah, I would imagine.
We'll test it out here. The Blue Testament crew will be going out in our headgear and...
Doesn't cover the forehead, so maybe... But it's just kind of near the top of the forehead right here, isn't it?
I assume that there's plenty of sound science that goes behind it.
Yeah.
I bet it's that little band is like $300 or something ridiculous.
Well, I'm sure it is.
Probably more than that, honestly.
All right, start Googling.
Okay, so 60th minute, Vermees makes a change earlier than he normally does. That's something I think a lot of people have asked from Peter Vermees, is giving Rubio more than 10 minutes on the field at the end of the game. And that worked brilliantly. What was it, like 39 seconds after he came on or something like that?
Thank you, Felipe Gutierrez.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, Raimondo is always doing those antics, man. He thinks he's so cool with the ball at his feet. And I'm just, every game I watch him play, I'm always waiting for that one little moment. And it was just a slight deflection, and that was enough to do it.
I mean, it was a beautiful finish. I mean, where else could he have put that to score?
Yeah.
No, nowhere else.
It was like he put it right where he knew. It was very, like, he knew what he was doing. He knew he had to put it there, and he did. I liked it. It was a satisfying goal.
There was a moment late in the game where Raimondo screwed up in the box almost, He was way back deep in the corner. I don't know who's pressuring him, Rubio or whoever, but he almost screwed up again. So
yeah, it feels like he almost does it a lot. And I was there were times I was like yelling at Shelton to like get on him a little more.
Yeah.
But he was doing Shelton was doing the work the majority of that game. He was.
But the thing is, you know, Rubio scored the goal, but he didn't really play much better than Shelton did when he was in there. He didn't do a whole lot else.
Not
particularly. Not a whole lot of hold-up play. He was on the ground rolling a lot. Remember that, and bitching a lot. But, you know, he didn't play a whole lot.
And got a yellow.
He didn't play a whole lot better than Shelton did. So,
there was the one time he was taken down in the box. Was that a legit call for a PK, do you think?
I didn't think so myself. I know what you're talking about, yeah. That's also when Raimondo got cleaned out by the same guy who Rubio claimed he got cleaned out by.
Oh.
Justin Glad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. That one, that's tough.
No, I was just going to say, I wonder with Rubio and with Vermees and how he chooses to allocate his time, Rubio does get more emotional than most players on the field. Like, he gets shaken very, mentally, very easily. Like, to think that he would go on, score that goal, and then still, like, I almost feel like Peter wouldn't have, like, maybe that's why he gets those few minutes at the end. It's like, go on, make an impact, and then you don't have enough time to get too fired up and, like, you know, start diving, start, you know, drawing fouls, getting yellows, putting yourself in bad situations. Like, that's not, in the playoffs, it's not what you want mentally. Yeah, you want someone who can go out there and score a goal, but you don't want someone who's going to be jeopardizing the team in other ways.
Well, maybe the other aspect was, okay, we need some fire, so let's put Rubio out there too.
Fire can only get so hot. We don't want to.
Exactly.
Before you get burned.
Before you get burned.
Another key moment from the game I wanted to talk about, it's before everything else we've been discussing, but the 26th minute, Albert Rusnak gets a yellow card.
So sad. So broken up about that.
Yeah, it really makes me feel for RSL, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I see his argument. Like, he was saying it was his first foul. I can see that, but also his boot was up really high and he was really late. And you're RSL, so suck it.
You probably deserve two or three other yellows.
Boom. Drop the mic.
So, yeah, I think that'll be, have an impact on this next game, I think.
Well, it does at least reduce their scoring ability. I mean, they still have Krylak, Guy, he was like the leading scorer, I think, goals and assists. And then Rusnak was, he had the second most goals and like third most assists or something. But without Rusnak, they still have Corey Baird, Krylak, I forget who else.
Severino.
Yeah. And, Severino, who was, you know, stymied this last game.
Yeah, definitely. We'll
get to that a little bit later.
Oh, yeah, they're still dangerous. No doubt about that. They also still have, of course, everybody's favorite João Plata. So,
did he play the other day?
The pesky João Plata.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, didn't he start?
Yeah, he did.
I think
Thad was making a joke and none of us. Because he's like so small, you couldn't see him.
I literally don't even remember him doing anything.
Oh.
That's more. It's not the size. It was the lack of noticing him.
I was just pointing him out, telling everyone like how small that guy is. all right, another point from the game we have to talk about is Johan. Thad, say your title for him.
The best player in MLS?
Yeah, because he can do it all, apparently. Man, that was big. Like, I get all the hate on him all year, but that was very huge for this team, that performance was.
I was impressed. Yeah. I mean, his play of balls out of the back into the attack, his reading of the games, his aggressiveness, though late near the box, got a little sketchy. It's like, uh-oh, don't do anything stupid. But, he was excellent.
He rode that line of not getting a card. But, I think he maybe made two mistakes the whole game that I picked out. One pass, I think, was pretty mediocre, bad. And then that near foul in the box. So, I mean, other than that, I think I can't fault him for anything he did other than that.
You could say on the goal that they scored, the ball was a cross-field pass. I mean, he's not supposed to be marking that guy right that moment, but it was his man who first received it. But that's nitpicky. Yeah.
It's not nitpicky. It's wrong. you're right. He wasn't necessarily supposed to be marking that guy at that moment. And when the ball was over there, he contained him. He did not let him make a pass in. It went back out and to somebody else.
Right. Yeah, he did a good recovery.
So, yeah, he did exactly what he needed to do. He contained the danger.
Yep.
It was the guys in the middle who didn't contain the danger. Ike, Elie.
Well, more of a great play, I think. But
I don't know
who could have stopped that.
The only thing I can say is Ike stepped out too when the ball went out to Roznak.
Yeah.
And when he played it into Krylak, Roznak ran by him and it was gone. So.
I'd agree, though. I thought he read the game really well. I just watching him get in position and step in certain situations. There was one play. It was something very simple, but it was just challenging, I forget who he was even challenging, but challenging a player, forcing the ball out of bounds. But like the way that he went about it was like the perfect amount of aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the right place at the right time, and it was just like one example of, I thought, a very consistent and strong performance in a position where, yes, he's comfortable playing there, but playing along a back line he doesn't usually play with and in the playoffs of all games. So,
and the whole back line was solid.
I thought so.
Yeah.
There were moments Krause had like right on the sideline on the left there, but like all the way up at the midfield that he was like making very good tackles and plays right there that were starting things immediately there. Mm-hmm. It might have been risky or, you know, something Vermees wouldn't like because he was jumping in such a dangerous spot. But, you know, it was working. I loved it.
But quite honestly, that's stuff that when Zusi's at his best, he's doing on the other side.
That's true.
So it was kind of a match set for, you know, their skill sets, what they were doing. And actually, Johan looked better at it in that particular game for that moment. And going against Savarino a lot was, you know, he's not an easy guy to defend. So
yeah, I thought that going off of that point, he did a good job of tackling and then like the tackle would be moving the ball forward for Sporting instead of like lingering. You know, when there's like a tackle and it just like it scrambles in like the same area for like way too long. I feel like with Sinovic sometimes, like he'll make the tackle, but the ball doesn't like get to the next person or the next player or like up the field. Like the next play doesn't happen as quickly as it was happening.
Yeah, Krause's so frantic sometimes where it's like he's not going to waste any time at all. Like if he has a ball at his feet, he's like pushing forward in one way or another.
And one of the faults of the beginning when when people were first criticizing was that he was slow in thought and slow in movement. And now he is fast in thought and fast in movement. And damn, he's good. Dumbass
hey,
Doyle
the
dude.
Best player in MLS is on Sporting Kansas City.
Hands, a lot of credit to, Vermees and Bliss and whoever else is scouting these people, that they're pulling in guys who can play winger on both sides and attacking mid and center forward and left back.
Well, and I know we talked about this before, but with Madranda out and Lobato out, those were the other two players who were the more versatile ones on the team. You know, in those situations where Sinovic isn't available for this game, probably would have been a Lobato or would have, you know, but to be able to have Johan step up and go in that position, whereas Lindsay, although he traveled, I don't know if that would have been the best, you know, starting player or that Peter would have wanted to even go with him there. But
now, I know we discussed this last week, but I really would not have had a major issue with Lindsay starting that game because he is a natural outside back.
Mm-hmm.
He played 5 games or whatever it was earlier this year there. He hasn't had any games recently, though, so he's except for the U20 game.
Right.
So I still would not have had a big issue with him starting there, but I do kind of understand the, you know, you're throwing a youth out there in a big game. Could you run the risk of damaging his confidence
mental psyche?
And, yeah. So, Krause, who maybe was not necessarily in a great place at the beginning of the season mentally, I think is in a really strong, confident place now. So one game, you know, getting torched maybe by somebody would not have destroyed him.
Right. And also in the context of, like, he doesn't typically play in that position for the team.
Yeah.
So it would have been not ideal and obviously would have gotten criticized regardless, but he just go right back up to up to the midfield.
So we do assume that Seth comes back for the next game.
Yeah, but then, could Krause make the difference up front? I mean, could he be the man to be that wild card
or,
that can change the game?
Just, make the sub at left back in the 60th minute if we need people getting flying forward. There you go.
Hey, he's destroyed Zlatan. He's destroyed Savarino.
Well, the question now is not when he'll be on the field, but where he will go. I mean, we've seen him at forward.
Exactly.
We've seen him at midfield.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Hell, Amelia goes down.
He mentioned that when I interviewed him last week, actually. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, that'll be his answer. We'll also find out that before he started playing left back, he actually started in goal.
Yeah, when he was six,
when
he was a
goalie.
When
he was six, not seven.
And he remembers that. Yeah. It's not a matter of, like, if he's going to be on the field, it's where and when, mm-hmm. I think, is really only the question is, does he start? Does he show up as a coming off the bench mm-hmm. to make a difference?
But that's the thing about him. It's not like a Gerso or a Rubio where you sub him in for that, like, burst. Not to say he doesn't have that, but it's like he plays, I think, the same whether he starts or whether he's subbed in. I mean.
But he does kind of have a flair, or like his style of play could, you know, light a game on fire that needs like a bit of a spark. So
yeah. No, that's not what I'm saying, but I'm just saying that, like, he's less known for being like, hey, Gerso, just run out there and annoy everyone up top for the next like 20 minutes. And
yeah.
Yep.
I mean, I don't have it right in front of me. I think he's like 175, 5'10", maybe, Krause. But to me, he has that low center of gravity, that power more than anybody on this team. And he does have that burst ability. I know you weren't saying he didn't,
right.
But he does have that ability to be a powerful, mm-hmm. hard to knock off the ball, quick, you know, strike player.
Right.
Yeah. That's, again, when a lot of people were criticizing him early in the year, and then, you know, some idiots up at MLS still do. But his teammates were talking about how hard he was to get off the ball and how hard it was to dislodge him. And he is got that strength.
And he's been so consistent, too. I know early in the season that was the problem, was not even consistency, but what did he even bring to the table was the question for a lot of people. But now it's, you know, he comes out and he is just as strong in, like, the opening minutes as he is when he's subbed in or at the end of the game. I just think he's been playing really solid for the last however many months now.
You know, time is, you see somebody say, oh, it's been 6 months and it's really been like 2 years. He's been playing solidly since when, can we say?
When did the tides turn? When was the...
We talking, was it July? Was it August? Was it,
you know,
somewhere around that time, wasn't it?
It's hard because Sporting went on that, like, wild hot streak for so long. So there were so many other great things to look at. That was like the Shelton Shallowy and Russell conversation. Russell was on fire. This was right after Felipe had been hurt. So I'd say it was sometime after Felipe going out.
Yeah,
and then
sure.
a couple, I'd say over the summer.
Sometime.
Yeah, it was definitely after Felipe got hurt.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, even though I've been pretty much a big supporter of him all along, at first it was I saw the potential that he had. Not mm-hmm. that he was doing it all the time, but I saw what he could do.
Well, his highlight reel showed you that too. Yeah.
And just wasn't quite, mm-hmm. he just wasn't right in the moment yet. And he just, it's just like every game, he put a little bit more of it together, a little bit more of it together. And I don't know if there's like one spot you can go, okay, he just turned on good. He
right, right.
Better and better and better.
Right, man, consistently.
Very gradual.
Yeah, consistently. Yeah.
But I think another big part of that, too, is not just feeling comfortable on the field, but feeling comfortable with the teammates around him.
Oh, yeah.
That's something that I know has been a big thing, you know, for the players, is the chemistry that this team has. And I talked to Shelton about that when I talked to him at training, you know, in his first year with the team. What's that? How did that chemistry build? How did it become so strong where it's not only noticeable on the field, but off the field when you're talking in the locker room after games, at training, seeing them the way that they're, you know, on social media, the way that the team, you know, posts like little fun videos and pictures. And I think that is another thing for Krause that, you know, when the team really started to gel and he maybe started to find his own here in a new city, new place, also kind of getting that comfort level up with the teammates, I think translates a lot on the field.
Oh, yeah.
Tell.
And I know he needs that confidence for himself, and he needs to feel that everybody else has confidence in him, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, I think that he felt that he wasn't getting that confidence maybe early. And I mean, I'm maybe putting words into his head, but he just looked like he didn't have confidence.
But
And then every like little success, a goal, an assist, you know, people were joking. It was the Vancouver game where they scored six. You know, he scored the goal finally, and everybody's, mm-hmm. yeah, I take a being up by two men to score. But maybe that was the turning point.
No, it was, and you could see it when he kissed Ilya for the pass that he gave him. It was just like, oh, such a relief. Like, mm-hmm. that was a great moment of the season.
I credit Peter Vermees as well. I love that he never, ever, to any extent, to any media, throws his players under the bus. Like, in whether it's with Shelton, whether it's with
He does, they're gone.
Right.
Well, we know that, exactly. So if they are under the bus, it means that they're packing their bags and they will be on the next flight out of MCI the following day.
Literally under the bus.
Literally under the bus. They're gone.
Being drugged behind the bus.
Yeah.
But he's gotten a lot of questions about Kraze, about Shelton. Like, those two especially, of new players who've come in and, you know, maybe not making the impact that people necessarily thought that they would be making right off the bat.
Or should be making.
And he sticks to what he sees out of them. And he, I just think, also helps them with that confidence. And that was another thing Shelton told me that was really cool, was about Peter and just the way that he coaches each player. Because it's like, yeah, he coaches the team, but he also has to coach each individual player the way that that player is going to respond best. Yeah. And Shelton said with him, so I was like, obviously my next question is like, well, you know, what's Peter's way of, what's his method with you? And he said that for himself, he's someone who can take criticism, he can be yelled at, and he can handle that. But that's not to say that everyone on the team can handle the same thing. So really understanding and knowing your players. And I think the way that Kraze has kind of blossomed in this last leg of the season, I think is also a testament to the great job that Peter's done in coaching him individually.
All right, so the coaching axiom is never yell at girls because they will never let you forget it and they'll always hold it against you. Is that true?
I mean, I'm having to put myself back in.
I've come across a few girls who could take it, but mostly that's true, I think.
I guess it depends on the coach and the respect level. I think it's a respect thing, if anything. I think it's a two-way street and the respect is there on both sides, I don't think it's an issue, and I think that's something that's important. I feel like if there's not a respect, whether it's player not respecting coach or coach not respecting player, it's going to be a little bit a little bit messier there.
So Kraze did very well, but I don't think there's really much of a debate on who should be a left back on Sunday. But I think that brings us to everyone's favorite segment that we've never not talked about in our, what is this, like a 30-something odd show? We've had this conversation.
We should really get a sponsor for this one segment.
What do you think, Cody?
I don't know, but let's do who's the starting striker?
Don't be a game show host.
Hey, at least it came off. That's what I was going for. Good job.
So maybe a job well done.
There we go, yeah.
That's what he's going to be for Halloween.
For next year, for 2019.
That's planning ahead.
Always.
So.
All right, so I'll start this.
We're normally very pro Kyrie here.
This debate keeps going back and forth between Kyrie and Diego. But do you notice the one thing that nobody really mentions? Christian Namath.
Well, yeah. He's just on the roster right now.
Yeah, he's just there. He's on the peripheral.
He's not even in the argument anymore.
Nope.
Will he be a super sub?
Well, let's not talk. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's hard because it goes back and forth. Just because Diego Rubio scores that goal doesn't mean that he should be the center forward. And just because Kyrie, you know, had those great last couple of games doesn't mean that he should, you know, that's not like necessarily an individual, you know, you have to look at every single game, obviously. But I mean, that performance though by Rubio, that goal, that's the number, that's what you want to see from a number nine.
Didn't play that well beyond that.
No, exactly.
That was one moment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like those moments are like, but if you look at Dom Dwyer, who is technically a number nine, I mean, that's him though. Like, he'll score, you know, that one amazing goal, which is all you really ask for them, is to get those difference making goals.
Rubio,
but then
does
he'll
remind me of Dwyer quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, the best strikers.
No, he doesn't.
He's a better finisher.
He's a better finisher. He does do more hold up play. He does combine with other people, and he's not a dick.
Okay, I meant the rolling around on the ground and bitching at everybody.
The best strikers in the world do have that ability, though, of they don't need to play that well.
Right, sure.
but they can pop up.
And Shallowy's been that way, too.
Shallowy has been that way.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's the answer. We were talking about why Gerso didn't come in sooner. Vermees realizes that, too, that Shallowy's played poorly and missed chances in a game. And then, obviously, his track record as of late.
But his touch isn't usually off by that much, though.
Yeah, it was, he was definitely playing different.
The previous three matches that he scored in and he scored the game winners in, I don't think he played well. They were okay, and there was a little bit, like, I saw signs of improvement that he was kind of getting back to where we saw him earlier in the year, that he was really good, but it wasn't great. But it was like, okay, people were calling for him to come out in at least one of those games, and all of a sudden he scores, and like, hey, it was a really wise decision to leave him in.
Love how this has morphed into a Shallowy discussion.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what Vermees was thinking that entire time. Yeah.
He's such an atypical winger, though. He's not good at what Gerso's good at, beating people to the line and getting around them and crossing. He's more of a cut into the middle and take that chance shot finish that ball that many people can't.
It's interesting because he's really not fast.
No,
like
he's not.
Like Russell has these like really quick bursts. Gerso,
he's not even
quick
that
bursts.
Quick.
No, exactly. Like his touches are always like his like long giraffe legs. Like he's just like long. You know, he'll make those. I think his biggest skill is like his lethal shot from anywhere, and he does when his touch is good.
Yeah.
Is really good.
Yeah. And like Cody's been saying, and I noticed this in the RSL game too, and that was more of a bruiser game. He's not a bruiser. He can get thrown off his game with physical play. He's not a guy to body people off very much.
No, he's not. Oddly enough, Gerso's stronger than him in that regard.
Yeah, in some ways.
And not because he's actually stronger, but because he runs and while he's falling, he just keeps going. But talking about Daniel, and I know we've morphed off the center forward a little bit, but I'm coming back to it. I'm trying to segue back to it a little bit. Okay, the strength of Daniel is that he comes in off the left side and gets to his right
mm-hmm,
foot
right.
And is really adept at finding the half an inch he needs to shoot. The strength of Johnny Russell is he comes down on the right side, cuts back to his left foot and comes in,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes goes to the baseline and cuts in and slides it into the middle when you have Shallowy coming over to the middle.
Mm-hmm.
What you have the strength of when you have Shelton in there with those two, when they're all playing at their peak, is that he's making runs and pulling guys out of the middle so they stay with him. And he's not a huge scoring threat, but he makes those runs a little bit better than Diego because Diego is looking to score.
Right.
Kyrie's looking to help the team a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is not necessarily a Shelton is better than Rubio statement. It's just the looking at how they play as when they're out there.
Well, and it's that combination of
how
those three play together.
So, but that's when Rubio is out there, we need Shallowy and Russell to be a little bit more of a playmaker. When Shelton is out there, we need him to create space for Shallowy and Russell. All it is a different style of play when each one's out there, not necessarily better than the other, just a different.
And Russell can do that because he can go into the middle because he used to play in the middle when he was younger and he can be that playmaker. But
did he play left back?
I agree with you, and I hate to typecast, but I think Shelton starts and Rubio does a super sub.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I believe it should happen.
If you look at if you're looking at his stats on the season and the goals that he has scored, how many of those have come in the off the bench? Like
five. He's got five goals off the bench.
And then doesn't he have? He has like six goals on the season. I should know this.
I will look it up real quick. I believe he ended the season with... I'm not seeing it here.
But regardless of that, he has scored more off the bench than he has starting, but he's not started as much.
Eight on the season.
He's not started as much, and when he has, doing the whole statistics thing, it's really hard to like say there's enough data points there to say he's better as a sub than a starter and stuff like that. But he has been a very effective coming in and being a complete change of pace, being a different player than what was out there. You could say that a lot about a lot of other players too, that they're better when they come in off the bench. And some players can't be better when they come off the bench because they need to get in a long type of rhythm. That's why Shallowy is better as a starter than coming off the bench.
So really we're saying it's up to Vermees to make the subs at the right time again.
And it was a damn timely one.
Yeah. But he does do a good job. And I hate that I keep going back to things that Kyrie has been saying, but we had like a really good interview a couple weeks ago. And we talked about that, though, with like how many weapons that the team has offensively. And he brought up the subbing aspect and that factor and saying that Peter, in terms of having, you know, helping the team adapt to the game at hand via subbing or switching up, you know, players and players that are playing together. The one that he was noting that he kind of laughed. He was like, you know, Peter and them usually do a really good job, but that's, you know, it's hard because there's so many good players and it's just hard to know the right time that someone's going to be on or that the right time someone's going to go in and make a difference.
All right. So Cody, I want to propose a game show for you here for the next moment. Name that depth chart. Who is our best left, middle, right guys right now?
Who's our best what?
Left winger, center forward, right wing.
Well, I was going to answer the game show that we're on right now and answer the question that I had already asked.
Oh, you should do that. You should talk. You've been quiet.
Of who the starting striker is. And I would honestly, going into that game, Vermees did it exactly how I would have liked to have seen it in my head. I want to see Kyrie start, and then somewhere in the 60 to 70th, I would like Rubio to come in. And that's exactly what happened.
Regardless of the score?
Well, no. I mean, there's definitely a situation, you know, tie game or behind.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Ahead, yeah. Ahead, you keep Shelton in. I think the team is going to be better defensively because he's a better first defender than I think Rubio would be. But, yeah, that's going forward, that seems like a damn good combination of let them get used to trying to battle Kyrie and his physicality the whole time and then have a completely different player come in with a different skill set and switch things up.
And that's the beauty of this depth right now is that each one of those positions, that's kind of where I was going with the whole depth thing, is at center forward, if you start Shelton and bring in Rubio, it's a completely different player. It changes things up. You start Rubio, you bring in Shelton, it's a completely different player. It changes things up. At left, I'm going to answer my own question. You start with Shallowy and you bring in Gerso, complete different player. You change things up. On the right, you have Russell, and who is his guy to
Crozet.
Come in?
Crozet.
A different player, and will come in and change things up.
Or Nemo. See, look, there we go. We said his name.
Or Nemo. Just looking at the last time we played at
which
RSL
position,
at home.
Though?
On the right for, you know, to come in on the right.
Yeah. When he did play wing, he was on the left.
Yeah, I mean, he's good on either side. Or as good as he can be on either side.
Last time we played RSL at home, just by the way, was when Shelton was out. Gerso started. Namath was the center forward and Russell on the right. So interesting there. So RSL hasn't, at home at least, seen, you know, our full roster at our home.
So is everyone here in agreement that Kyrie is the number one still?
Yeah. See.
Shaking your head does not do good on radio.
It was a very sincere look in the eyes, though. She was like, yeah.
Yes.
Kobe. She just said it
was
her.
I was waiting for someone to reaffirm it for me. But yes, since you all cannot see me, I will speak
to that. It was a very, very warm and confident, almost loving shaking of her head, yes.
Felt like they could feel it.
There'd be a nodding of the head, yes.
You can feel it through your ears, people.
And okay, well, that doesn't make good radio, but
yeah,
that's the way it should be, people.
If it was TV, it would have been effective. But
no, I mean, the fact that we all agree, it doesn't make good radio.
I didn't quite agree.
Oh, okay, okay.
I still think it's a little bit situational. I think Shelton has the edge of starting and Rubio coming off the bench because of the change of pace. But if it's a different team, if it's not a muck-it-up, cynical, asshole team like Salt Lake, it might be Rubio starting and Shelton coming in to protect the lead later.
Okay. Any other sort of a preview for this weekend that we need to talk about? This game specifically coming up.
Well, let's see. We've reviewed Salt Lake before. They're cynical. They foul. Well, they muck it up.
Yeah, that first goal is going to be huge. I mean, right? First goal is going to be massive. They score it. It's like, uh-oh, there's the away goal. They've got control of the match. We have to open up and open ourselves to counters.
Hopefully,
if we score it, you know, obviously that is a heck of a lot better for us and puts us on the front foot. So that first goal is going
to
be massive.
I assume they're going to already be pretty open to start this game. Vermees isn't really ever afraid to play attacking at home.
Okay, when you said they, I wasn't sure which you're referring to.
Yeah,
us.
No,
okay.
It could be.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Do we really go for that first goal, the first 5-10 minutes, and try to get it and get that advantage? Is that what he says to them going out on the field?
Well, I was just saying, if RSL scores, I don't think Sporting are going to have to really change too much of the way they're playing. I think
not
they're,
immediately, but
yeah.
And
for Salt Lake, they have to score. If the result is 0-0, Sporting's happy.
Oh yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's a little bit of a boring game for the fans, but they're happy as far as moving on. So Salt Lake has to do something. They have to push forward at some point. Now maybe they don't change their whole be cynical, muck it up kind of guy style, and they just hope to get a counter in the process. But
yeah, that's probably what they'll do.
That's kind of what they've done all year and been successful at it.
Yeah, last game we had 20 shots, 6 on goal.
Well,
and we tied 1-1.
They were mediocrely successful at it. They backed into the playoffs.
They were sixth place. Yeah,
with the Galaxy losing to Houston at LA. Come on. So, you know, their coach wasn't even watching the playoffs. He was drinking beer and barbecuing.
That's just my picky.
So they were moderately successful. I mean, they were, you know, 20 goals less than Sporting or however much it was. I'm sure Bob has the info over there. I'm putting him on the spot because he has a bunch of papers in front of him.
They scored 55 this season. We scored 67, something like that?
65,
okay.
But how many points less, though, in the standings?
Yeah, I don't know, what, 7
13.
Or something? 13, okay, more than I thought, okay.
Actually, less than I thought, but anyway. So, but they were just moderately successful. They were decent.
Yeah, but against us.
True. I'll take your point there.
I'm feeling very confident about this. I think a draw in this game is going to be easy enough.
So your prediction is?
Oh, I don't know. 2-0.
Oh, okay.
Is that fair?
Allie?
Agree with that. Well, we do know. Don't ask Peter Vermees if they're going and looking for a draw because he's going to say no.
Of course.
They never do. But no, I do think Sporting, energized by Children's Mercy Park and the fans, 2-0. And I think Shallowy gets the first goal. We're going to go even deeper in the prediction.
I would love for that just to get him fired up. And
I know, for the rest of the...
Yeah.
Not that he should need that because he just scored the last three game-winning goals on the end of the season. But, however, I did get torn apart for one of my Chiefs predictions. I predicted the Browns over the Chiefs, so I'm.
Like, duh.
I get a predicted upset every now and again, but whatever. That's neither here nor there. With Sporting.
I'm saying 2-1. I'm just not sure who's going to score first, but 2-1. I'm confident that we will pull out a victory. It may be dramatic.
1-1 and goes to penalties.
Thanks, Dad.
Both of those that you said would be very Sporting to do.
Exactly.
RSL scores a goal in the 9th minute. Like, that would so happen. And then they would go on to score 2 to win it. Like,
off of a bad back pass from Roger or something.
Yeah. Yeah, something terrible where it's like, guys, how did we get the first seed?
Well, that's one moment in the game that we didn't talk about. I mean, it ended up being called offside, but that save that Milia made.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that ball that came through the trees is how he described it. I thought of you immediately, Cody. But, yeah.
Yeah, that ball came from, like, 30 yards out in between, like, 10 different bodies.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that didn't count, technically.
Right, but still that save. Let's hope he's on come Sunday.
Okay, there you have your predictions, which are very meaningful, and we thought about them very hard.
And they're also all going to happen, single one of them.
I do have one more dumb question, though. Cody's like rolled his eyes like, really? One more?
What do you got?
Why did the keepers get to wear the same colors as their teams in this last game?
That's an extra time question. That they did? I didn't even notice.
Yeah, Raimondo was wearing red, and Tim was wearing blue.
Yep.
Slightly different shade of blue, but the red was pretty close.
The rule is they have to wear a different color?
It's supposed to be.
I don't know. It's a conspiracy.
So you have something planned on where we're going next? Is that right?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to circumvent.
But Thad derailed everything.
Okay, I don't want to derail or circumvent.
I mean, we're just going to extra time, I have things we can talk about.
There we go. Okay.
See, then I didn't derail it. We're still doing it. Didn't derail it? Come on, man.
But Cody has the one he wants to talk about first.
So, we were talking a lot about Krause earlier and the different spots that he plays, and Thad mentioned this team and Vermees specifically going for versatile players. That's kind of becoming Vermees' MO in the last couple seasons. He's looking for that out of players. And there's something to say there. You know, if you look all around the world, an issue with MLS, something that is holding back like the overall quality of the league, is like the roster limitations. There's just smaller rosters than other places in the world. And I think bringing in all the versatility that he's doing, if there's success this season, could be a new template for this league. And that signing Zlatan gets you 7th place. And that signing 3 big-name players, well, that works for a while, I guess, so that doesn't work. But, yes, instead of going for these big-name players, versatility and everything like that, if it works this season, could show the rest of the league what's up.
Well, wouldn't every team want to take a template out of the coach of the year who coached the number one team in the Western Conference? Isn't that the book that you want to steal?
Yeah. Coach of the year.
Coach of the year.
Would only be just.
But, I mean, I think it should be obvious. Zlatan comes over, in my opinion, more for, like, the hype of it all than the actual what's being brought to the team and for the betterment of the team.
Okay, I have to say, I argue with that a little bit. Zlatan didn't get them 7th place. Their horrible start got them 7th place. But
well, yeah, I know. But
you
yeah.
bring someone like Zlatan in he's going to, like, carry the team on his back to a... Like, he's going to have amazing goals, like his 500th, which was awesome. Like, that was so cool. And, you know, Children's Mercy Park sold out when they played, as it was going to anyway. But, you know, people are there because they want to see Zlatan.
Sure. No, the bigger point there is I
was just giving you trouble.
is that you sign a player that's that expensive and it will hinder the rest of the team.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, Zlatan's not going to play anything other than what he plays. And so having all these, you know, 600,000, as Matthew Doyle puts it for Krause, might be bonkers if you're just looking at it as the, you know, whatever the number midfielder on the team he is.
Mm-hmm.
But also he was a winger when we needed him. He was there when Gutierrez went down.
Right.
He's played left back. He's played 2 of the 3 midfield spots. He's just been so useful. And I think versatile players is going to become a key unless MLS allows larger rosters at some point.
I'm not totally sure that we have smaller rosters than EPL does or some of the other leagues, quite honestly. I've looked at this before, and I was just trying to look it up while you were talking. Like the thing I saw, again, I'm confessing some ignorance here, but like the one thing I just saw was EPL had a roster size of 25. We have a roster size of 30. Dead air.
I thought you were going still.
No, I'm not totally sure about some of the other big leagues. Because I've looked at this before, I was always thought that was one of the limitations also.
Well, the number, so roster might not have been the best word. All of those teams still have, you know, 500 players like under their control still, though. And I know you can argue Sporting's Academy and all throughout the Midwest could be considered the same thing, but it's not entirely. And second team of a lot of those Premier League teams are players that are more higher quality than the USL roster for Sporting.
True, but I mean it's also difference in EPL and MLS. I mean, but so their second team should be better than our second team, quite honestly, at this point. But I do think that's where maybe the rules about borrowing players is different, is they have like their U19 and U23 teams and stuff like that, where I think they can borrow players off of that for certain competitions.
That's what I mean. It's like, so just flatly using the word like roster size might not be the best thing, but they obviously have way more capabilities and players that they can bring in. And especially like Italy, they like don't have a limitation, right? Don't they just like sign player after player and like hopes that one of them will pay off?
Yeah, but again, we're probably talking like apples and, you know, peaches or something, right? Because like a team can sign 50 players and then loan 30 of them out, and they only have 20 players on their roster, but they only have 20 players that they can play in that season if they have that done that, right? So like EPB, for example, is signed by Man City, but he's not on their roster. He's not on their limitation of how many players they have. They could have 50 of those guys, and there might be some limit to that. I don't know.
Okay, so the money is the limitation, but there's still the same impact like on the roster. Like all of those teams are able to build a deeper pool of players than MLS teams are.
Yes, they can build a deeper pool because they have more money, but they can also, even if they couldn't sign 50 players, they could still have a deeper pool of players because they could sign 25 guys that were all better.
Right, I know. So the point I was making is just the fact that MLS teams are hindered, the word I used might not be as important, but having versatile players is a very important thing for this league.
It is, and I'm not disagreeing with that, but it also helps to look at the reason why that is. It's not the
it's
number.
Always money. Always.
Right. It's not like the number.
Literally always money.
It's not the number of players they have on the roster. It is the fact that they're spending $600,000 on a player.
The number of quality players that MLS teams have to use is way less than the number of quality players.
But that's
overseas.
That is much more a factor of that they can spend. What's the average salary in the EPL? $1 million?
Yeah, you know? Right.
Average salary in MLS is $300,000.
Right, but so the MLS rosters are still limited based on European rosters, and because of that, versatility is key.
Even compared to the Mexican league.
Which are how big, do we know? Ooh, I shouldn't have asked that.
No, I'm talking about the versatility factor.
You just said it wasn't the size that mattered.
Interesting also thought, too, considering we're playing Real Salt Lake, who has the most homegrown minutes in any MLS team, I believe. You know, and this is probably a discussion for offseason, but is next year going to be the year when Kuzain and Busio and Lindsay get... I mean, they got some minutes this year, but I mean significant minutes next year. I think that's... Hopefully that's what happens, but...
Well, what holes will open up for any of them?
Yeah, we will talk about
Roger re-signed.
Yeah.
Felipe will be back.
They're also there to serve as mentors. But
yeah, yeah.
I'm not terribly convinced Felipe will be back, but we'll talk about that later.
That Felipe will be back.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
I'm not sure I would actually be terribly upset with that.
Down the road.
All right, there you go. Tease that for the off season. Stay tuned.
I do have another extra time topic, though.
I have one more.
Okay.
You go with yours.
All right.
It might be the same one.
So, three of us being St. Louisans.
Oh, never mind.
So, the St. Louis Blues tweeted out, good luck to our Sporting Kansas City brethren, you know, in the playoffs. And a lot of people got upset about it in St. Louis, which I do understand.
I didn't see that.
But
I like it.
I do understand, but can't people be nice? Is there something wrong with being nice?
Well, I think it comes from the sheer bitterness for so many people in St. Louis who care about soccer, because a lot of the people who would
but
want an MLS team.
But they shouted out to the St. Louis USL team the same thing.
Okay, but
a lot
like,
of people are like
okay, like the St. Louis USL team, like yeah. As if that's even the same thing. Like people, the crowd that I know that would care about getting an MLS stadium
yeah.
are also Blues fans. Like they would be sharing a lot of the same like audience. So I can see why it would, Cardinals did that, I think people would just be like kind of confused mostly. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would have gotten as much. I just think that like Blues fans
also are. So is it wrong or right
fans.
Of the Blues to do that? What's your thought?
Here's what I think. I think St. Louis doesn't have an MLS team.
Mm-hmm.
nor do they have an NFL team. I think it's good for a city that is 3 hours away to support. I'm reading it right now. Well, and I guess that's the other thing, too. It was that for those listening who want reference, if you saw Sporting Kansas City tweeted out those like playoffs things that other team or other teams and other schools were then putting their logo to show support for Sporting Kansas City as they go through the playoffs. I think a city 3 hours away that doesn't have an MLS team and hasn't, no, like they, there's no competition there, so why would it be bad if they support them?
A lot of people are saying, well, first of all, did you do the same thing for our soccer team? They accused them of not when they did. And then they're like, well, Sporting plays in Kansas. So why are you even saying that?
So as someone who works in social media, what happened here was Sporting like made all of those. They send them out. They sent out like 500 emails probably and even told them what time to start posting it. And so the social media person or the team or the crew for the St. Louis Blues like got to work that day and they're like, we need to like, what should we post today? Oh, hey, someone sent us something. Yeah. That's like an easy, they sent us copy and everything. Oh, here, I'll just copy and paste that. Boom, I got a post up.
Well, and also maybe this is also a push.
It could in some ways be, yes.
St. Louis cares about MLS. Right. We support MLS teams.
Right.
We like this. We want one.
I think that is a very good point, Allie, is that the Blues were saying it's a lead-in for MLS to come to St. Louis. But two, you're forgetting something. St. Louis Blues did a preseason game here last year, was it?
Yeah, against Minnesota Wild. Right.
2 years ago, whatever it was?
It was last year.
And Brad Davis and the Blues got together. Brad Davis went on the ice with them, so it must have been 2 years ago. And the Blues came down to training and stuff like that. So because of Brad Davis being a big Blues fan, being from St. Louis, that was where they actually had a connection was the PR guys for Sporting and the PR guys for the Blues are already friends from that meeting.
And why not? Why not? Like the only thing that St. Louis and and Kansas City, they only share one of the same sports, and that's baseball. Like other than that, St. Louis has the Blues. Kansas City doesn't have an NHL team, and they don't have much
Mavericks
out.
Fans now, come on.
But okay, I'm talking about teams saying. Who play in the same like
level
on the same level. So
the question is, was it wrong with the Blues to do that?
No, I think it's great. It's support, and it's. I mean, I would probably have a different answer if St. Louis had an MLS team already.
Well, of course,
because then that's just like what are you doing?
If they had an MLS team, it would be.
They don't
wrong
have
of
one
them.
Yet. Exactly.
Well, duh.
But
so it's like,
and they took a lot of heat for it. So,
but I do think there are people in St. Louis who do support Sporting Kansas City.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
So it's also, I mean, it's not like they don't have any audience that they're reaching with that message. That's just people getting fired up for no reason.
That's the fallacy we have where a couple people scream on Twitter and then everyone sees it and then talks about how a couple people were. And then it turns into everyone is complaining.
Yeah. And if you went and looked, I bet you the 12 people who complained to the Blues total Twitter followers were probably 48.
Yeah. Okay, so
pretty.
What you got, Cody?
I just want to stop talking about St. Louis.
Thank you, Dad. Again, this is not TV, but Dad just threw something at Cody for saying that.
It's a soccer show. I have soccer to talk about. Johnny Russell has been called into the national team once again by his Scottish brethren.
And sisterin.
Is this like the word of the day? Everyone is brethren.
He will be available this Sunday, and their last game is on the 20th, and should Sporting Kansas City win, the next game will be on the 25th. So he has 5 days.
I'm cool.
Which
plenty
seems,
of time.
As long as he doesn't get hurt.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Would.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We just had to mention it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I thought my crew was going to have some.
Is back with the under-20s now?
I have no idea.
The weekly schedule has Jalen Lindsay U-20s games on it, so that they sent out. So.
Oh, I would assume so then.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
Yeah.
That's all she wrote.
Allie is not a real fan of Sporting Kansas City, so she's not going to be at the game on Sunday.
I'm surprised we didn't talk about the 2 o'clock start, but you know, hey, it is what it is.
Well, I think it's just hard for MLS. I mean, the season runs so long, and once you get into the fall, college football's on Saturdays, NFL's on Sundays.
And like some people were saying,
like,
they're not going to put the New York teams on 2 o'clock slot.
No, like exactly. So, I mean, it's a bummer. I won't be there, sadly. I will be at Arrowhead doing my Chiefs duties. However, I will be watching, and I'm very sad I will not be able to make it.
I will be there. I'll be on the recap, looking at the cauldron from a distance.
Hopefully warm.
I don't even know what the forecast is.
46.
Allie Trost with the weather. Coming up here shortly, we will
low
have
of 26.
A low of 26, a high of 46. Given the 2 p.m. start time, assuming the sun will be up and... I would be a terrible weather person.
Press box isn't looking too bad now. Patrick, I will be at the game. Give me a spot behind the glass, man. Put my name on a seat.
Talk to your neighbor, Allie.
There's like a 2% chance Patrick is still listening. If he ever listens, there's a 2% chance he's still listening.
That is true.
At this point.
I don't even know is that eye.
I think he's listened once.
Well, we'll find out if he hears.
We'll start saying more controversial things so he'll have to pay attention to us.
Okay, so who are we pulling for, Portland or Seattle? Or do we
Portland.
Care? I agree.
Why?
Most people wanted Portland instead of RSL. That's I did.
I think Sporting actually matches up better with Portland, but...
Yeah, and so I'd rather not face the hottest team in MLS.
Okay, I agree.
Portland all around.
And then on the other side?
Anyone that is not Atlanta or New York.
Well, my dream has been dashed with DC United out, so.
I know. I picked DC United. I picked Sporting over DC United in the final.
Well, if NYFC makes it through, we play at home. For most.
I know. So, I mean, anyone except the Red Bulls or Atlanta.
NYC crew.
I'm good.
Crew. No, I want NYC.
Columbus Bowl.
Okay, anyway, get excited. We will see you there, and we'll have another pod for you as we celebrate the victory, hopefully. Go Sporting!
Anything you shake, that's what I'm in. My foot, my tail.